Broadcasting live from the Regis Business Center and office suites at Satellite Place in Duluth, it's time for Gwinnett Business Radio. Gwinnett Business Radio spotlights and highlights companies in Gwinnett County and the people who lead them.
And hello again, everybody, and welcome to Gwinnett Business Radio. I'm your host, Mike Salmon, and joining me today as a co-host is Brandon Kiever. Good morning, Brandon.
Good morning, Mike.
How you doing today?
I am awesome. How are you?
Great. How was your weekend?
Fantastic. You know, we sponsored that charity motorcycle ride on Saturday. I got to give away a bunch of great prizes from Harley-Davidson. I had an awesome time.
That's great. Looking forward to talking more about that when we get done with the show. But we've got a couple of guests in the studio today. Joining us from Gaslowitz Frankel LLC, it's a law firm in the Atlanta area, is Adam Gaslowitz and Craig Frankel. They are partners in the business. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Glad to have you here. Gaslowitz Frankel LLC, Craig, Adam, I'll let you guys take the stage right now. Tell us a little bit about your firm and the types of law that you work in.
Gaslowitz Frankel does what's called fiduciary litigation, which is trusts, estates, and business disputes that are dealing with money, whether they be a will or someone worried about a family business. And somebody's essentially taken something or suspected to have done something wrong. We're going to deal with the dispute side. How do you resolve it? Hopefully by strategy, maybe by mediation, ultimately by a lawsuit.
Now, you guys specialize in fiduciary law, as you talked about. Talk about the firm. When did you guys start it? When did you get together? How did you two hook up?
I started the firm in 1989, so I guess January would have been our 25th anniversary. Craig joined our firm in 2008, and we've been partners in this firm ever since.
What's made it work for both of you guys? Because sometimes you get people that partner together, just doesn't work. But you seem to genuinely like each other, which is probably step one.
Yeah, and we often advise people not to form partnerships because they do often end in litigation. Well, I went 17 years without a partner, and was doing fine, but our firm was grown to a point where we needed more help. And at about the same time, Craig and I were opposing counsel in two different lawsuits. So we met each other through conflict. And through the process of working through those two lawsuits, we became friends and we came to respect each other really well. And it seemed like a perfect relationship at that point.
There's a lot of different types of law that, of course, you could practice. Why fiduciary law? Why did you decide to kind of expertise in that area?
Well, I'll tell you how I started, and Craig came about it from a completely different angle. I actually started out my career as a transaction lawyer, which means I drafted documents. I did wills and trusts and business plans and mostly represented closely held businesses. When I started the firm in 89 doing just transactional work, we started periodically getting referrals of business that involved litigation in those same areas, which I had not done before. But being new at owning a firm, I decided to try it and started to get more and more of those cases. What I learned is that most estate planning attorneys are pretty confrontation averse and really want nothing to do with a conflict. And I don't actually mind conflict. I don't think it's a great way to solve problems, but I don't mind dealing with conflict. And so we started handling those, and the more we did, the more we got, until eventually in the mid-90s, we just stopped doing transactional work and just focused on the litigation end of the practice. Craig came at it actually from a completely different angle.
I started as a pure litigator. That's all I wanted to do since I was a kid. And when you start I started a good big firm, came from a judicial clerkship, and started to do the kinds of cases you get assigned, and you get assigned cases. And the first trial that I was assigned was a will contest. And I enjoyed it. And I might add we won, but I also enjoyed it. And when you're at a firm, that's kind of the work you're going to do then. From now on, you're going to get cases that relate to it. And I did more and more and found that I really enjoyed it. Because it takes, first you have to actually learn the law. So I had to learn about wills and trusts. And that was something that I promised myself in law school I would never do again. But now I know a lot about wills and trusts. And then you get to take that special knowledge and use it in the litigation field and use some of your litigation skills. And that's actually what brought Adam and me together. Adam and I are actually very different. When I go down the hall, he's my tax nerd. And he's my strategy guy, but I'm going to be the one that wants to go to court. And so we complement each other well. And in fact, when we started, we actually took personality tests to see if we were compatible. And I hate to admit this out loud, but Adam and I, according to the tests, are quite compatible. My wife of 23 years and I are not. In fact, they told us we should never marry. But Adam and I are supposed to get married, and I'm not sure we can do that in Georgia.
not happening.
Do you guys ever step in prior to litigation? So do you ever come into a meeting with new partners or perhaps a family is setting down and they're going to pass on a legacy business or take a look at that trust? Or do you primarily step in when litigation's already the end all?
That's starting to happen more now. For the first at least 20-plus years, we didn't get called until after a dispute had arisen and either there was a lawsuit pending or about to be filed. So it didn't happen. But as our reputation grew and our we give a lot of speeches each year to the lawyers in the bar and to the community at large about how to avoid estate litigation, how to anticipate problems that might arise in your estate planning and how to sort of plan around those. And the more we did that, the more we started getting calls from both attorneys in the estate planning field and bank trust officers to come in and advise them about potential problems they see, about an estate plan they're doing where they suspect there might be a conflict or where they know there's a dysfunctional child or a family that doesn't communicate, and to help them work through the potential problems they might have and perhaps take the plan they're doing and maybe tweak it so that it doesn't end up in the conflict that they anticipate.
There's actually kind of three ways we do it. One of the ways is actually going in to trust companies or fiduciaries and saying, let us see what your strategies are. Let me tell you what you could do as a trustee to resolve issues and avoid them kind of generically. And, of course, when they will come to us then and say, I've got this specific problem. We're also now getting calls from people who are drafting large estates or having a family dispute and say, here's what we want to do. And I love the question because intellectually it's just fascinating. They say, if you were going to try to challenge this, what would you do? And we look at it and say, here are the areas that you have weaknesses. Here's areas that you've made bad decisions in that you could avoid. And then the third area that we really are expanding and truly enjoying is coming into early disputes, typically outside of Georgia, and saying you've got a dispute, you can hire lawyers and probably do very well. But before you do that, maybe you need an experienced lawyer in this area to help bring things to a head and resolve them in advance by talking about what the issues are. One of the problems we have in disputes is the resolution is often quite complicated. And we need people who understand that resolution. So one area we do, of course, is we try to help other people before there's a dispute. And largely, they're successful. But I will tell you our number one tip.
What's that?
And our number one tip is talk to your beneficiaries. Talk to your partners. When Adam and I joined, and when I tell anybody who's starting a partnership, it's like a prenup. You've got a contract. What happens if you have a dispute or you have a disagreement? The best time that you're going to be the most fair, the most honest, and the most understanding is when you start. So figure out a way that you're going to have a dispute resolution in advance. And when you have a dispute, you'll follow the rules, and you'll be better off.
But this comes up particularly in the context of our clients who have businesses, family businesses. There's often some family members working in a business, other family members who are not. And so conflicts, potential conflicts, arise a lot in the context of how do you transition a business from one generation to the next. And so a lot of estate planners who deal with owners of closely held businesses contact us to say, you know, we know we're going to have this problem. We know we're going to have a problem when Generation 1 retires and parts of Generation 2 take over because the other parts of Generation 2 are going to feel slighted. They're going to feel like their sibling is mismanaging the company or taking too much compensation out or the stock distribution isn't quite even or there's the ability of one to outvote the other. A lot of times people who are not involved in the business, the other siblings might end up with more stock because the one that's in the business is just one of, say, five children. And it's easy for the non-business operating siblings to vote the other out. And so you've got to work around that. You've got to either reallocate your estate or find some other way to make sure the business doesn't implode as soon as Generation 1 retires.
And just remember, when we're talking about that, when we're talking about the economy and how we're trying to get things going better, whether you're Republican or Democrat, the majority of businesses in the United States, other than government, are small businesses.
Right.
And we know that small businesses are fragile, particularly at transition. And most small businesses going to another generation will fail. So the challenge is not to have it fail, but this is often the sole family legacy. And it may be that one or two or some of the siblings have worked in the business. It's their sole source of income.
Right.
And that's difficult.
We're listening to Adam Gaslowitz and Craig Frankel there with Gaslowitz Frankel LLC, and we're talking about wills and estates and trust disputes. And I was going to ask you, what is one of the more common problems and issues you see and that you have to litigate? And I think, Craig, you kind of touched upon it, is people that just really don't have a prenup, as you call it. And I'm sure you run into people all the time that, hey, we get along great. We just never thought it was going to happen. And your advice is, doesn't matter if you've been best buddies for your whole life, you need to have some kind of an agreement and almost not expect to have disputes or problems, but to be ready for that.
It solves disputes. I don't know how many people in the audience are married, but you got to learn how to argue with your spouse. I got advice when I got married, and the advice is that you never tell your wife that she's wrong. There's always, when you think that your spouse is wrong, the answer is you're supposed to say a mistake was made. But you get into a rhythm, a good or a bad rhythm as to how you argue. When you have, in the beginning, a paradigm, what do you do if you've got a dispute? Who wins? So when you're drafting wills, drafting a business agreement like an LLC, a lot of drafters care very hard about how it's tax set up, what it's going to work like for tax reasons. But they're not looking into the future, what will happen as you actually do it. It's very easy to do things when you're successful, but there will be dips in the road. How do you make that decision? What do you do if somebody has an illness and the company needs to move on? So putting in impasse resolution, though it sounds like you're planning for dispute, you're actually not. You're planning for resolution. You're setting up a way to talk. And this is what we talk to our drafters. We look at all the documents we see, and most of them aren't looking to the future. So the number one problem that we have is somebody coming in and saying, I don't know what's going on, therefore I think they stole.
And for those folks, Craig and Adam, that are thinking, well, I don't want to make that investment right now. If you don't make the investment now ahead of time, it could cost you a lot more down the road.
Oh, sure. For the cost of getting a shareholder agreement or an operating agreement drafted when you form your company, you may spend $1,000 or $2,000. But the cost of not doing that and having a dispute down the road is going to be orders of magnitude higher than that. The cost of litigation, hiring lawyers for both sides to gear up and fight, often means the destruction of the business.
When it comes to estates or trusts or wills in these disputes, you mentioned the prenup and having a partnership agreement in place and taking care of being proactive. What are some of the other disputes that you run across that are common that you think a lot of folks, if they just planned out or thought it out, could maybe avoid?
Probably one of the biggest areas of dispute involves the poor choice for a fiduciary. You know, either the wrong person that you've chosen as a trustee of your trust or the wrong executor of your estate. A lot of times it's the wrong choice, not because that person isn't qualified to do it, but because that person is somehow a lightning rod for conflict within a family. So if you name your oldest son as the trustee of the trust and he doesn't get along with your new wife, you're going to have problems. That often is the biggest problem.
And you're going to see that, by the way, not in what we call in our industry blended families. 50% or more of all families will have a second marriage or children from a prior marriage. It's just the way our society is. So you would logically anticipate those kinds of problems, but it actually happens in I don't know what the right word is, original families, because the dynamics are different. We are now living a lot longer. The demographics from my parents' generation, where they had a life expectation at birth of about 60 to 65. A life expectancy at birth today is 85 to 88. So we're now a full second generation beyond. Our parents are living longer. And we're going to have to make the decisions, perhaps for them. Where are they going to live? And who's going to take care of them? And most importantly, from a conflict standpoint, who's going to pay for it? So even children who are watching, or grandchildren who are watching, are going to say, if we spend this much money on parent number one, there'll be no money left over for parent number two, or, and I shouldn't say this, but it's true, or for me. And so that's where the conflict starts to arise. And when you put in people that can't deal with it, it's difficult. One of the most common setups that we see is surviving spouse and oldest child. Well, the idea that they would balance each other out.
As co-fiduciaries, you mean?
As co-fiduciaries. Mm. But they're not going to balance each other out. They're going to be a conflict with no way to resolve it. And every time one wants to spend money, the other will suspect. It puts them in a position you never want a parent and child to be in, particularly as the parent ages and, if not becomes incompetent, becomes diminished, either just slower physically or mentally, but still wants to have control.
Our guests here on Gwinnett Business Radio are Adam Gaslowitz and Craig Frankel with Gaslowitz Frankel LLC. This may be kind of an odd question, but I'm going to assume that you see this every single day in your business, and that is greed. Greed must be a big part of what you see and probably at the basis of a lot of the disputes you see.
I would use the answer is yes, but I would use the word entitlement. Everybody believes if their parents are wealthy or their dad or mom own a very big business, they're entitled to it. And the truth is they're not. Not under the law. The law says very clearly you or I can give our money to anybody. And in Georgia, that means, and we're one of the few states that do this, to the exclusion of your spouse and children. Almost every other state in the union requires a minimum share, a guaranteed share to a spouse. Georgia does not. You can cut out your spouse, so you have total control under the Georgia Constitution. And so people expect it. The other thing is kind of normal. Everyone thinks their parents have more money than they actually do, either because they're wrong, but largely because the family lived longer. The demographics are really changing. If you live 20 years longer and we've got lots of medical intervention, you're going to spend more money.
You've given one or two great tips when it comes to estate disputes. Are there some other tips you can pass along to our audience when it comes to disputes with the estate?
Oh, we can probably give you a lot of tips. Let's see. One of the big issues we see are, besides poor choice of fiduciaries, is powers of attorney. We see a lot of people giving out powers of attorney to their either to a spouse or to a child or to a trusted friend, and those powers of attorney are often not very well thought out. They're supposed to be used in case you become incompetent and can't do something for yourself, but a lot of times they get abused by people who take the authority with that power and start either mismanaging assets or transferring assets outside of the ownership of the principal.
So once somebody's in that role, Adam, is it hard to replace that person? Is it a long, complicated process, or is it? What do you have to prove if you're saying that they're not doing their responsibilities correct? What do you need to do to try to replace them if they're not doing the job correctly?
Well, the first problem that comes up is often people don't know that it's being abused. So if you've got an elderly parent with a number of children and one child has that power of attorney, the other children often don't know what's going on until it's too late. So a lot of times the problem isn't replace them. The problem is finding out in enough time to do something about it. Once you've found out, there are various ways that you have of freezing the assets while you try and remove them. But court intervention is often needed if the elderly parent is too incompetent to sign a new power of attorney. And so court intervention is slow. I mean, you can often get injunctions that will freeze things quickly, but actual removal could take a while.
I've learned in my life as a lawyer that there's a truism about thieves. When they steal the money, they don't sit around and have it waiting for you to collect it when you catch them. They spend it. And so you're talking about a slow and cumbersome but also expensive process where you may not get the money back. What we suggest as a tip is to use the Reagan phrase, trust but verify. When you do your documents, don't tempt people. There's two types of people who steal or do things wrong. It's the predators who come after our parents and our elderly, but it's also the opportunists, people who just see it. They take a little here, take advantage there. Write your documents. Think about this to not give the opportunities. Think about ways when you do it. Lots of lawyers to save money say don't do an accounting. My answer is always do an accounting. The more sunshine there is, the more transparency, the more people are seeing what you're doing, the less likely it is that they'll be tempted, because most of it is just temptation.
And Georgia law allows Georgia allows you to put in your will that the executor or trustee is not required to account and is not required to post bond. And a lot of times lawyers do this because it makes things easier for the trustee or the executor. It makes things cheaper. You don't have to buy a bond. The problem with that is you're not really making things that much easier. Bonds are not that expensive, and accounting is something they ought to be doing anyway, so providing it shouldn't be a big deal. The problem, though, is if something does go wrong, if you've chosen badly, without a bond, there's no way to collect. So if you've got a bank who's a fiduciary, banks are bonded. If they do something wrong, they have a deep pocket, you can collect it. But if you've named an individual, a child, a friend, your accountant, whoever, and they misappropriate assets or they invest them poorly or they do anything else that's improper, if there's a bond in place, at least there's a way to recover. Because often, like I said, you're not going to find out about it until after it's all gone. And when it's gone, it's gone. That's the thing that most planning attorneys can change in their documents right now and save an awful lot of grief and heartache.
Do you all advise a lot of family members who may not have the power of attorney to go through forensic accounting and kind of hold that executor or whoever does have power of attorney accountable for their actions?
Well, the answer is yes. A lot of wills say that you don't have to do an investigation.
Right.
And you may not choose to, but yes, if you have an estate and you see that you think a power of attorney has been taken advantage of, then you would try to hire a forensic accountant. The problem you have is the choice of the person who's going to be your executor is almost always the same person who abused the power of attorney. Because if you said, I'm going to give a power of attorney to so-and-so, either because you were unduly influenced or forced to do it or you chose to do it, that's the person you trust. Hmm. So it's kind of like the fox looking after himself. So you got to – it's a hard thing to do. The better answer really is to do accountings along the way.
Right.
I do have one tip that kind of goes with that. If you've got a child who wasn't particularly good with money during his or her life, why name them to be a fiduciary or an executor or a trustee? And having a co-person doesn't help.
Right.
Having a sibling that they always fought with to now say, oh, you're not doing it right. And there is kind of we see it over and over and over. When families have disputes at the end of life, when they're dealing with inheritances, or they revert back to their childhood relationships. So I cannot tell you how many times I have heard, they always do that. Well, when they always do that, that's when they were 12. And I had an elderly client come tell me that I couldn't trust her youngest son, and that's why he wasn't there, and that's why she never talked to him. And I'm talking, and I'm hearing about that she doesn't trust her youngest son. Her youngest son was 74. She's 90. She had a child at age 18. The family relationships stick. So we have to worry about those. Long way of answering, you would rather not do a forensic accounting if you can stop it in the beginning. But from a litigation viewpoint, yes, almost every case that deals with money and malfeasance will have a forensic accounting aspect.
How often do you all actually become a therapist in these family disputes as opposed to their attorneys?
Every case.
Yeah, every.
I saw that answer coming.
Yes.
from a mile away.
Yeah, and after a while, you get good at that. People often ask us if we have psychology degrees, and we don't. We've just dealt with these kinds of family issues, these family dynamics.
But if you minored in psychology in college, probably would have been a great benefit.
Yeah. So my music minor doesn't help.
They may have a psychiatrist on staff doling out prescriptions after every meeting.
We've actually thought about that, and we've often had psychiatrists or counselors at mediations because it helps ease the tensions when families are fighting.
Yeah, and one of the things that Craig kind of mentioned, just a lot of this is just common sense, but people sometimes just don't go with common sense. If there's a listener out there or listeners that are interested or think they may have an estate dispute and are thinking about maybe challenging something, where do they get started? What's their first step?
Well, the first step, of course, is to call us. And you can get our phone number, but our website address is GastelwoodFrankel.com or GeorgiaDisputes.com. And you can get us on Twitter at Estate Disputes or on Facebook.com/EstateDispute, but you call. The first step really should be, though, in addition to calling us, of course, the first step really should be talk to the person who's in control, not necessarily at the funeral. I can't tell you how many people start a dispute at a funeral. Probably not the best time because it looks like you're saying, gosh, how much money do I get? But talk to them and say, let's sit down and have a family discussion, maybe a couple days from now, depending upon the family traditions, and see what's out there. Again, the majority of time, then there's an accusation or suspicion. Nothing wrong was done. They just don't know.
At the end of this interview, we're going to give all that contact information one more time as well. But let me let you in on a little bit of a secret. There's a lot of firms out there that do the same type of law that you do. What makes you guys unique and different from the others out there? Why should they pick up the phone and call Gaslowitz Frankel compared to some of the other firms?
I'm surprised there's other firms that do that. So I'm gonna fight you on that one. most of our referrals actually come from trust and estate lawyers and accountants. There are people that do it, but our approach really comes because we do almost exclusively this. and that we're seeing it day in and day out. There are 159 probate courts in Georgia. We've probably been in 140 of them. And we're looking at it truly from a universal perspective. How can we resolve it? The rules are different, and the dynamics are different. And we've handled the cases in Georgia. Probably any case that you name of a big case that's come to Georgia, we've been on one side or the other, or certainly been involved in some way, even behind the scenes. So I think the starting point is our experience. We've actually handled a lot, and that we actually understand the law. But the other issue is we understand the solutions. Even with a litigated case, winning is not necessarily winning. You've got to figure out how can this family continue, including not spending money on lawyers. I know that's hard to hear a lawyer say, but sometimes the answer is resolution, and sometimes the answer is a resolution differently. And I view that as creativity, and frankly, that's what complements Adam and me, is that together we often can bring a solution that neither one of us would have thought on our own.
That's very impressive. Let me give that contact information for the listeners out there. The website, once again, is GaslowitzFrankel.com, GaslowitzFrankel, GaslowitzFrankel.com. You mentioned Facebook, Craig. It's facebook.com/estate dispute. And you can also find them on Twitter at estate dispute. Adam, Craig, it's been a pleasure. Never thought I actually would enjoy a conversation with a couple attorneys, but I did today.
I never would have expected an attorney to possibly advise families on not paying attorneys.
Oh, I didn't say not pay. I said you shouldn't necessarily spend your money, but once you've engaged a lawyer, you should pay early and often.
Oh,
That's what my wife says.
Thank you for that clarification.
and I'll tell you what, Brandon, if I have a dispute, these are the guys I want on my side, not on the other side.
All right. That's good.
I don't mean between you and me.
Right.
I'm talking
right.
In general.
In general.
Yes.
Hey, best offense is a good defense.
There you go. Gentlemen, enjoy the conversation very much. We'd love to have you back sometime.
All right. Thank you. Enjoyed it.
Thank you.
All right. Craig Frankel, Adam Gaslowitz with Gaslowitz Frankel LLC. A quick reminder that you can enjoy this program anytime 24/7, including any of our other Gwinnett Business Radio programs, by visiting GwinnettBusinessRadio.BusinessRadioX.com. Also, you can follow us on Twitter. Gaslowitz Frankel is not the only one that has a good Twitter account. We do, too.
That's right.
Thanks to you, Brandon. It's at Gwinnett Radio X. And we're also on Facebook, what do you know, at facebook.com/Gwinnett Radio X. For Brandon Kiever.
Thank you, Mike.
I'm Mike Salmon. We'll see you next time right here on Gwinnett Business Radio.